everybody, and welcome to a Big Thing episode of the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and each Friday we like to take a look back at a big story, issue, or concept that's dominating the headlines, but we haven't really been able to dive into yet. This week, we're talking impending vacancies. I capitalized that phrase because reasons. Much like a hotel with a noon checkout at 11:50, we've got looming departures. Liverpool, Bayern Munich, and theoretically Barcelona are all expected to be without managers at the end of the season, and multiple other clubs could quickly find themselves in similar situations. So who's leaving, who might be arriving, and who might be staying after saying they were leaving? Here with me to talk it all out are Joe Lowry. Hello, Joe.
Hello, man. I feel like the hotel checkout times are just getting earlier and earlier. Like, it's noon, or is it 11? Is it 9 a.m.? What time do I need to be out of this place, man? Tell me.
You don't need to know, Joe. You don't need to know until they show up banging at the door, in which case, probably get out at that point. Now, Joe, you've been linked with the Bayern Munich gig. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm just waiting for them to meet my salary demands and for them to finally realize that Julian Nagelsmann is the ex they shouldn't go back to. But once we get those, you know, very small details sorted out, I am planning to head to Bavaria.
Good details to work out. And Graham Ruffin joining us. Graham has been linked with, according to reliable sources, a cheeky Nando's, whatever that is. Hi, Graham.
Oh, hello, Taylor. Love being linked to a cheeky Nando's. Hopefully we'll be linked to a cheeky Nando's at some point this weekend, if all goes well.
I hope for the best for you, Graham. So Joe gets Bayern Munich, Graham gets chicken. Perfect. Let's dive straight in.
I think I clearly win in that scenario.
you really might be. Let's dive in by first talking some more about Xavi Alonso, because it felt to me like we had a game of dominoes set up. We just needed to see where Xavi Alonso would go. Then the rest would start to fall. Instead, he's staying at Leverkusen. Joe, this was a surprise to me. I believe it was a surprise for Graham and to you. Our Discord seems to think this wasn't a surprise at all, because it was logical for him to stay at Leverkusen. So let's start there. What would you say are the primary reasons he's decided to stay in Germany for another season?
It sort of seems like this is just who Xabi Alonso is. And credit to Graham, because you were the first person, and I think probably of the three of us, the least surprised about this whole thing happening. You pointed out on, what was that, Monday, the days are really running together for me this week, about how when Xabi Alonso was at Sociedad, coaching in their system, not coaching the first team in Spain, coaching their second team, that he was given a chance to go and coach Borussia Mönchengladbach in the Bundesliga, a well-respected, like solid mid to upper mid-table Bundesliga club. And he said no. He said, I'm going to stick around in Spain and do this for another year and continue to grow as a manager. So in a lot of ways, this sort of just seems to be who Xabi Alonso is. Like, this is a very, very similar situation. I thought, and maybe this is me just being jaded at this point, I thought, man, so many big clubs open. Like, yeah, okay, Xabi Alonso showed some patience in the past. He seems, by all accounts, like a smart dude. And seems like a very good manager. Maybe one of the ones that, in my estimations, like can actually tangibly impact a team on the extremes. Like, he seems like he's got a pretty good head on his shoulders, but I thought at a certain point that would run out. Because I don't know if I could, if I was Xabi Alonso, turn down a Liverpool or a Bayern Munich. Two teams that, by all accounts, were very, very interested in getting Xabi Alonso on board. Surely that comes with a nice little pay raise, although Alonso's not necessarily hurting for money after an illustrious professional playing career. But, like, these doors only open up so often, and you don't truly know what's going to happen in another season. You might miss your window, even though we all think that's probably pretty unlikely for Alonso. He's still going to have offers, but you just don't know. In life, you just don't have the answers to what's going to happen in a year. And so that was the big reason. Even though he showed patience before, that was the reason I thought, hey, he's had a great year with Leverkusen. There's pretty much nowhere to go but down for him at Leverkusen, frankly, and he will go down in the league table. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't next year, or at least in terms of points or something along those lines. He will not have the same success.
You don't think they can go 2 years undefeated, Joe?
It seems unlikely, doesn't it, Taylor? But man, it does in a lot of ways feel like Alonso making another Xabi Alonso decision, and a lot of those Xabi Alonso decisions have gone very, very well.
Yeah, I don't want it to revise what we said on Monday when Xabi Alonso last
say you called it all along, Graham.
No,
say
I did it. Not at all. All right. I did not at all. I was surprised when those words came out of his mouth, and I think a lot of people were. I'm not convinced Bayern Munich and Liverpool were surprised. There's some interesting reporting that has come out after the fact, and with that context and with that background, had we known this before Xabi Alonso's presser a week ago, then maybe this wouldn't have been so surprising. So on the evidence of the reporting by David Ornstein at The Athletic on this story, and he's someone I very much trust on stuff like this, there was certainly interest in Alonso from Bayern Munich and from Liverpool. But it maybe wasn't as solid as some had suggested. It had been, looking at the Liverpool side of things first. One of the reasons for this is that Liverpool are making some big front office moves at the moment. So Michael Edwards is back. He is in this kind of newly created role as CEO of football for Fenway Sports Group. I think the idea is that they're going to become a multi-club ownership group over the next few years, and he'll kind of lead that. And Richard Hughes is coming in from Bournemouth as the new sporting director this summer, purely to look after Liverpool matters. So Liverpool haven't really been in a position to make a solid offer to a manager, although the implication is that discussions took place over the international break, and this prompted Alonso to make a decision, and he had those discussions with Bayern Munich as well, who are also in a position of, they're a little bit further along than Liverpool in some of their front office moves. They've got a new sporting director in place in Max Eberl, who's coming from RB Leipzig. But they are also kind of figuring out the way forward right now, and are maybe still formulating plans and settling on a few things. So I have no doubt, and this is on the reporting of Ornstein at The Athletic, that discussions did take place between those clubs. But I don't think it was the case that Alonso had two contract offers on the table from Bayern and Liverpool, largely because Bayern and Liverpool, it seems like, had a read on Xabi Alonso making this kind of decision, that he'd be the kind of person who would stay at Bayer Leverkusen for another season. Keep in mind that Klopp did this at Borussia Dortmund. He wins two titles at Borussia Dortmund in back-to-back seasons. There was interest in him, I think, from Real Madrid after that first season, potentially from Liverpool as well, and he held out, had a second season, I think even had a third season, and leaves midway through that third season at Borussia Dortmund. So yes, surprising to me as an outsider, but I don't think when this news crossed the desk of Bayern Munich and Liverpool that they maybe weren't as surprised as the rest of us.
Graham, as discourteous as this may sound, how much of the surprise or relative surprise with him staying relates to the fact that it's Bayer Leverkusen? Like, in the past, I've made jokes, but like kidding on the square jokes, that like Bayer Leverkusen will finish somewhere between third and fifth because that's what they do and that's what they have historically done. I do think that's part of it, that it's not as though this is him leaving Barcelona to go to Liverpool or leaving Liverpool to go to Real Madrid. It is leaving a Leverkusen team that historically have not been Bundesliga title challengers, at least in recent memory, though no one really has been except for Bayern Munich. And so I think it felt like they are a sort of second tier club. Again, that sounds very discourteous. I do not mean for it to be. It's more so the reality of when you're talking about a European Super League, you're not throwing in Bayer Leverkusen, put it that way. So I think that is part of where I was coming from with this. And I do then wonder, this is my own thought, if some of it is that he looks around Xabi Alonso and sees Bayern Munich looking like they are still in a pretty chaotic state of disarray, and I'm not sure if there is anybody who's going to solve that anytime soon, certainly not in short order. Dortmund seem like they're going to keep being Dortmund. Leipzig seem like they're going to keep being Leipzig. I'm not sure the grass is fully greener anywhere in the Bundesliga, so maybe it makes sense in that way for him to stay, challenge for another Bundesliga title, like do some things in the Champions League, yeah, and then see what happens.
Well, I think that's an entirely valid point, Taylor, is there's a real opportunity for... I take Joe's point that it seems unlikely that Leverkusen will reach the heights, certainly domestically, that they have this season. Yeah. I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility. If they keep enough of that core group together, and that is going to be the challenge this summer when offers start landing on the table for Florian Wirtz and Jeremy Frimpong. But if they manage somehow to keep enough of those players together, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that they do the repeat in the Bundesliga next season. This group is strong enough to do that. And the Champions League is the other factor, as you kind of referenced there, Taylor. Xabi Alonso hasn't coached in the Champions League. He hasn't tested himself at that elite level of European competition. And so he will feel there's an opportunity for Leverkusen to make their mark in European competition as well. So I fully applaud Xabi Alonso. It's not the decision that I thought he would make. It's not a decision that we see many managers make, just because these jobs, I mean, I was going to say they don't come up very often. In some
Except
cases,
all of them
they,
this summer.
They do. Yeah, all of them this summer. I think the Liverpool job is the one. You look at Bayern Munich's recent track record and you would say, okay, in a year or two, that job might be available again. But if Liverpool make the right appointment post Klopp, we've seen that them give patience to managers previously, even before Klopp, it feels like that opportunity might not come arise again very soon. So, yeah, surprised that he made the decision, but I can see the factors behind why he would make that decision, and I'm excited to see where he goes after this season. Like, that's the exciting thing, is this is a more exciting decision for me I can't deny him going to Liverpool, succeeding Klopp, there would have been just an innate interest there in how he would do that job. This is a more exciting decision for me than him going to Bayern Munich. That was the least exciting option for him. So I'm excited to see how he can progress this team.
And I think if you look one more beat for me on Xabi Alonso staying, like if you're his agent talking to him, we speculated about this on the Weekend Review that Carlo Ancelotti has a year left on his deal. We would assume maybe they'll renew, maybe he'll have more time there. But if he doesn't, then there'll be a vacancy at Real Madrid, where Xabi Alonso also played and has plenty of connections. But I think even if things went pretty poorly for Leverkusen, I don't see them falling into like mid-table obscurity or anything like that. We're going to give Xabi Alonso the benefit of the doubt. I feel like most people will and say like, oh yeah, he lost this guy, he lost that guy, this person got injured, he worked miracles with them in the first season. It doesn't feel like his stock is really going to take that big of a hit, short of there being like an insurrection in the Leverkusen locker room or them getting relegated or something. I feel like his stock will stay high. Real Madrid could be an option at the end of that season. If this season has shown us anything, it's that a manager who's coming in on a multi-year deal can be out the door at the end of that season. So it does feel like stay in a stable situation, continue to develop, continue to see what comes, and then maybe see what else is out there at the end of next season. Who knows? Maybe he's a Leverkusen lifer. In the meantime, we do have actual vacancies. Graham turning to Liverpool. Jurgen Klopp is obviously departing at the end of the season. His assistant, Pep Linders, is the bookmaker's fourth favorite to take over, despite, I believe, officially being ruled out and that he will be leaving the club. So who knows if that gets walked back. But
can we guess the others? Taylor, can we guess the others? I don't even know that there were odds for this stuff. That makes sense that there are. Graham, you want to have the first guess?
So I know who the front runner is, right? So it's Ruben Amorim is the new front runner. Roberto De Zerbi's got to be in that list.
Yep.
I'm struggling with the third one. Is it?
I'm
going to
guess Nagelsmann. I'm guessing Nagelsmann's for the third one. I think I didn't know Linders was still like in the bookmakers' decisions for this process, but I've got Amorim, De Zerbi, and Nagelsmann. Taylor, do you have the list?
I do. It has. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. This is different than it was yesterday. It's Amorim is the very much the favorite. Hmm. Then it's De Zerbi. Then it's Pep Linders, or no? Then there's one more that you haven't mentioned. Then it's Linders. Then it's Nagelsmann. Then it's Guardiola. That's an interesting one. Not sure about that. Then Tuchel, Postecoglou.
Don't make that bet. Just
Gary O'Neill and Xabi Alonso is still on the list. There's one name.
Is it Inzaghi or Mota?
Tuchel.
Joe got it there at the end.
Mota. Thiago Mota.
Yeah.
Nice. Good game. I like these games. Good
Jose game. Has also been rumored a few times.
That is never going to happen.
Antonio Conte also has been rumor linked, but that doesn't make much sense either. So, Graham, it does feel like we are in a position where Sporting Club, the Portugal manager, Ruben Amorim, is the clear front runner and favorite.
Yeah, things are pretty fluid at the moment, but you're right. The general consensus within the media is that Amorim is now the front runner to get this job. He has always been on their shortlist, so it's not like there has been a massive change of direction from Liverpool on this, but Alonso removing himself from the process has clearly pushed him up. We spoke about Sporting on this week's listener questions episode, but Amorim has done an excellent job there at Sporting over the last 4 years. Sporting are on course for the Portuguese title this season. They play a possession-based game. They like to control games. They like to play with intensity. They counter-press. Amorim has a good record of bringing through young players. There's a connection with the fan base at Sporting as well. So you can see why Liverpool would be interested.
And Graham,
go ahead, Taylor.
To emphasize a point you made earlier, to Liverpool maybe having advanced knowledge, maybe they had some contact and were told Xabi Alonso won't be leaving. Going back and looking at articles about Amorim and his links with Liverpool, they go back more than a week of like, he is their plan B. There is some concern they won't be able to get Xabi Alonso, but that's okay because they've got this guy who they're all very enamored of. In fact, some are saying he might even be the better option. Like that felt like advanced spin on the situation. But also I think it is justified because I think there is reason, if you're a Liverpool supporter, to be excited about this potential hire.
Yeah, there is reason. And one of the most encouraging things about the names that have come out post Alonso deciding to stay at Leverkusen, there's a lot of overlap between them all, right? We've spoken about the formation that each of these managers, Alonso, Amorim, and Roberto De Zerbi, who seems to be the other one near the top of the list, they all play that back three with wing backs. Now, I don't know whether that's a deliberate thing from Liverpool to shift into that shift into that shape, or whether it's just these managers all play a similar style and that shape favours that kind of style. But that is encouraging for Liverpool. There's a common thread between a lot of the managers that they're looking at. De Zerbi is another one worth highlighting just for a moment. He has a clear identity in terms of how his teams play. The question over De Zerbi, though, is his personality. David Ornstein was talking about this on the Athletic Football Podcast. De Zerbi is quite outspoken. He's currently criticising his own boards at Brighton for not spending more money in the transfer market, not spending more of that 123 million profit that we spoke about on Take It or Leave It this week. And Jurgen Klopp is not exactly a mouse in his character or personality, but he never really goes after his own club. He's very much about building that mentality within the club, that cultivating that culture within the club. And so that might not be to FFG's taste to have someone like De Zerbi in charge. So at this point, yes, it very much seems like Ruben Amorim is the most suitable candidate for this job.
I don't disagree, Graham, there at all. I think De Zerbi will pop up somewhere other than Brighton, if only just because that seems to be what he's telling people. Maybe not in quite those exact words, but the quote, he was asked if he could reassure Brighton fans that he would still be around next season. And he said, quote, "I want to speak with my club. I have a contract. But the problem is not the contract. The problem is to find the same plan, the same target, the same vision for the future. For me, I have to decide what is my future." He's got a foot and a half out the door at this point in Brighton, which is understandable. Like, the same thing that we talked about. You can't really begrudge any of these people for trying to jump up the ladder when there are actual rungs open because other people have fallen off. Tactically, I think there's a lot of really interesting discussions here as it relates to Liverpool. We talked when it first became clear that Jurgen Klopp was not coming back. He'd announced it. We talked on a Weekend Review episode about how Xabi Alonso in a lot of ways was the natural successor, but also tactically, maybe not so much, right? Liverpool have become much, much more possession dominant over the years under Jurgen Klopp. He adapted his tactical approach in a way that, frankly, I don't think gets discussed enough. Like, a lot of people still talk about Liverpool like they are this pure, like, against
heavy
the ball
metal,
pressing.
Hunting and pass.
Yeah, that's not real, right? Like, they do press more than anybody in the Premier League, but they also have, like, 60% possession on the regular, right? They dominate teams with the ball as they dominate them with their pressure as well. But along with that comes more direct play than most other elite soccer teams around Europe. So they do play more direct passes, certainly than Man City, more than Arsenal. They will get forward, and they will move the ball quickly towards goal, play some longer passes over to Mo Salah, who will shift all the way wide at times on the right wing. There are still some very German, like Jurgen Klopp, stereotypical things about this Liverpool team. Xabi Alonso never really had that. His team at Leverkusen, they play a ton of short passes. They build with clever, like, third-man combinations. It's very few long balls. It's very little direct play. They are all about control, 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 keeping players tight and in these nice little triangles. Klopp has become more like that, but he's not that kind of manager. It's not how he sees the game. De Zerbi, I would say, is much closer to Alonso in how they coach teams. Slightly different shapes. We talked about the back three. We've seen a lot of back four, although it's very fluid for De Zerbi and Brighton over the years. Like, he takes pains to give his team all the little instructions to draw the opposition forward even like 2 feet so then they can go ping, ping, ping and play through the lines, right? They are a very, very possession-dominant team. Of every team in the Premier League, no one plays more like Man City than Brighton. And you can look at different metrics in terms of direct speed and tempo and all these things that give you that feeling. Like, he is not a Jurgen Klopp-style manager either, which then brings me back to Ruben Amorim, like the manager that is still the bookmaker's favorite, as you said, Taylor. He is the one that I think a lot of folks expect to get this job. Young, I think it would be a fascinating hire just because he's a manager that a lot of folks who don't watch the Portuguese league don't still know a ton about. He plays, when you look at some of the direct speed metrics and other in-possession metrics in Portugal, and when you watch this team play, he plays a little bit more like Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp have played. And maybe they want to shift away from that. Maybe they want to become a possession-dominant Man City sort of team where there is a lot more short passing. I don't know. But Amorim will dominate the ball in this 3-4-3 shape. They will counter-press. It looks a lot like the elite teams in Europe look relative to their competition in league play. But there is just this extra twist of verticality that mirrors some of what Liverpool have done. So if you're looking for the continuity choice, Amorim isn't that in some ways when it comes to his experience and from his background. But in a lot of ways, maybe tactically, he kind of is that choice more than some of the other options.
Graham, he seems to really enjoy clearing out the left side for Nuno Santos to basically be a marauding left wing back, similar to like what Achraf Hakimi does for PSG. Do you have any concerns about Andy Robertson continuing to be able to perform a similar role, or no, will this mean Liverpool need to reinvest?
That, to be honest, fills me with confidence that Andy Robertson will have a bit of a career renaissance if that's the role that he is being asked to perform. Where Andy Robertson falls down, and we've spoken about this, I think, already this week, is where he has to come in centrally and act as part of a back three, and he looks a little bit uncomfortable positionally and even on the ball playing out from the back in that role. So if he's being asked to be an attack-minded marauding left-back again, like Amorim uses Santos at Sporting, then that's a good thing for Andy Robertson. Just to go back to Taylor, I think I heard you correctly here when you led into to me. You said that Amorim will be an exciting appointment, right? Is that correct? Can you remember what you said, or was that so long ago that you've forgotten?
I refuse to be trapped. Why are you asking?
Because I agree with that to a certain extent from our perspective as people who are looking at the tactics and how Liverpool might progress as a team. That is exciting. After Xabi Alonso rejecting Liverpool, I'm not convinced a lot of fans will see this as too exciting. I think whoever Liverpool appoint this summer is going to be a gamble. I know Alonso doesn't have a lot of experience, but there was a sense he would have been an exciting, positive appointment. A lot of people think he's the next guy, right? He might not have reached the top like Man City hiring Pep Guardiola from Bayern Munich, but he's going to be the next managerial superstar in European football. With Amorim and De Zerbi, I like them. You can see why they appeal. There's overlap between their styles. There's a common thread there. All these things suggest that they could be successful for Liverpool. But you are counting on someone making a big step up into that job. And that's something that makes me wonder if we might end up, after all this, it might be a left-field candidate. Like, I'm just throwing some names out here, but like Thomas Frank, Andoni Areola, Liverpool are going to look at this from a data perspective, and their data will be deeper and more in-depth and more revealing than the data that is publicly available. And so if Thomas Frank rises to the top of that list, or Areola, I wouldn't rule out them making an appointment like that. I think they've got their work cut out to find the right person here, and their parameters might be different to the parameters of most fans.
It's a really interesting point. I kind of want to continue exploring it. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little more about that, a bit more about Liverpool, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, many other clubs still to be discussed. Back soon. Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS. Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode. This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs, who would like to remind you when you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. You don't want to end up with Ryan, Graham, and Joe. Just kidding. Just kidding. Very much just kidding. Because I was very fortunate to have the three of them all join the show. And I had existing relationships with all three of them that allowed me to know that they could handle the amount of work that would be required, that they could be diligent in their tasks and be very effective on mic. And all three of them are. But again, that's because you have the existing relationship. If you don't feel like you have that with potential hires, then LinkedIn is going to make it very, very easy, and they're going to make it feel like you're connected to that person. They have a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire because it gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. But when you are setting the requirements and making it very specific as to what you're looking for, you can very quickly narrow it down to find the right candidate for that position. Hiring is easy when you have that many candidates, so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring, and you can too. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/TSS. That's linkedin.com/TSS to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. Thank you very much to LinkedIn for sponsoring today's episode. Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. Graham, to continue the point you were making there before we went to break, it does feel like one where once Xavi Alonso is staying at Bayer Leverkusen, there is not the sort of obvious list of like, this guy's available, this guy's available, this guy's available, this world-class manager is obviously like able to make a move. It does feel like we're sort of getting some retreads, some very experienced veterans who maybe might be past it or have lots of baggage that they're bringing. And then it is maybe not like newbies or anything like that, but unproven on a bigger scale. Like when you look at the odds again, like we talked about Liverpool's, I'll go to Bayern's here in a little bit, but like Roberto De Zerbi is near the top of that list for Bayern Munich. And that's a manager who I think has had, justifiably so, a lot of hype. But lest we forget, there was a certain Brighton manager who also had a lot of hype, who then made a big move to a bigger club. And yeah, that's the one. And then maybe that didn't work out so well. So it does feel like there aren't nearly as many consensus, obviously slam dunks, this is the appointment to make. It's why I think some clubs might maybe be hesitant to pull the trigger on sacking their managers this offseason. Am I missing anybody? Is there anybody that jumps out to you all as being a very obvious, you got to hire this guy if he's available?
Not really. I mean, the candidate I've already mentioned, I do wonder when a big club comes calling for him, is Thomas Frank. I know Brentford are not having a vintage season right now, but their budget is still one of the lowest in the Premier League. I think they're probably going to comfortably avoid relegation this season. They finished in the top half last season. They play this modern, well, in some ways, proactive game, but obviously they're very good in the counter-attack, very good at set pieces, but we've seen that have an influence at the top end of the table. Arsenal, obviously, very successful with set pieces this season. And Thomas Frank has done a tremendous job over a prolonged period of time at Brighton. He's also got the cool air of a Scandinavian, which obviously shouldn't count for anything. But the point I'm making is he's not English, right? English managers tend to, even when they succeed at these sort of clubs, get overlooked. He's European and cool. And I can't understand why he hasn't been linked with more top jobs. So he's the only sort of name that hasn't really been widely mentioned. It would not surprise me if he ends up in pretty firmly in the process at some point.
Either way, I think to your point, it is going to be a tricky situation for any manager coming in to replace a legend and a very long-serving manager in the form of Jurgen Klopp. No one is going to compare. No one is going to be able to be compared because Klopp has just such a force of personality, was so popular among supporters, is so popular among supporters and the club itself that it's going to be a big ask, and I think will require a lot of patience and maybe as few direct comparisons as possible if you want to build camaraderie and chemistry. We shall see how it plays out. If you all had to bet right now, are we saying Amorim to Liverpool? Is that what's going to happen this summer?
Yeah, that's what I'm going for. And I take Grim's point. It's not the flashiest of appointments. I don't know that Liverpool are that club, though. Like, I don't know that they're the flashy club. And I think some of their fans probably see that and actually do appreciate that about them. I don't know if that's the majority or not. But I also don't really see the flashy appointment out there. Nagelsmann's probably the flashiest, and he's got a job at the moment, and I don't know. I'm not sure how shiny he is after the Bayern Munich debacle either. So yeah, I'd go Amorim at the moment.
Let's talk about that Bayern Munich debacle then, since Graham is echoing the Amorim to Liverpool rumors. That does make another club we're going to discuss an even more interesting proposition. But let's first go to Bayern Munich. Would you all like to guess the betting odds there? I believe I told you earlier, De Zerbi is the top of the betting odds list at time of recording. Can you guess who else is in there?
I'm banking on Nagelsmann in the number two slot, Taylor.
You are correct. Yes. Graham, that means you now must pick the number three slot. Man. I can give you a hint if you would like.
Okay, go for it.
He is also a former Bayern Munich manager.
Is it Hansi Flick?
It is Hansi Flick.
Oh, wow.
And then number four is not a former Bayern Munich manager,
Jupp but Heynckes.
Has screamed a lot and is out of
Mourinho.
A job. He's out of a job currently. Oh, it could still be Mourinho. Antonio Conte, Sebastian Hoeneß, Jose Mourinho, Xavi Hernandez, Ruben Amorim, Xabi Alonso, Unai Emery, Jurgen Klopp, Luis Enrique, Erik ten Hag. Now this list is just
That is a list of people. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I believe they have Xavi Hernandez. They have Hernandez, Xavi, and Xavi Hernandez. I feel like that should maybe count as one person. So let's talk about some of these links. Let's start with De Zerbi, who, as I said, is top of the list. That is a surprise to me. Joe, is that a surprise to you?
Not necessarily. When you think about Bayern really were confident, it seems to me from the reporting I've read, even more so than Liverpool, that they had a real chance to get Xabi Alonso. And from the moment that he comes out and Alonso decides, like, hey, says everybody, I'm going to stick around, that, I think, really, really hurt Bayern Munich. There was, in some ways, this natural transition, maybe even more natural for Alonso than going to Liverpool after Leverkusen, to go up to Bayern. Like, the traditional top dogs in Germany, a league that you know, a league that you've spent real time in, both as a player now and as a manager. A lot of that stuff seems like it would have fit really well. And now, without Alonso and with Amorim seeming like maybe a bit of a better fit at Liverpool for some of the tactical reasons that I mentioned, and maybe more of an FSG pick anyway, it doesn't leave Bayern with a ton of really inspiring options. What I would be fascinated to see, truly, would be to see De Zerbi get this job. I kind of just want to see, this is entirely selfishly motivated, by the way, I would just like to see him coach a team that we end up, for better or for worse, talking about more than Brighton on the show. Like, it would be fun to have an excuse to watch a bit more of what De Zerbi does, because I think he is a fascinating manager. I think the way he plays is fun to watch. It's intricate, it's detailed, it's complex, but also it's fluid and simple at the same time, which I think maybe describes a lot of the best managers who have ever step foot on a sideline. I would love to see this happen. I think tactically, Bayern have a squad that could execute a lot of his principles very, very well. It's maybe not like a like-for-like change, both in terms of level, but also in terms of some of the things that he wants from his squad. De Zerbi likes to really play these short line-breaking passes through midfield, as I talked about earlier. Oftentimes keeps the wingers really, really wide, which I could see being a good fit for someone like Leroy Sané, who has the speed, although that wanes as you age, obviously, but has some of the speed and 1v1 ability. Coman sort of fits in that category as well. You could find space for Musiala, and half spaces are a little bit deeper. And I don't know, you know, that Alphonso Davies is going to be around next year, so maybe you can give the width to more of the wingers and less to the fullbacks. I think stylistically, it would just be a whole barrel of fun, and I think he is a really, really good manager. Not one without flaws, but maybe is another one who sort of can really improve a team and can actually make a difference. I feel like we've seen that with Brighton. Maybe he would be the right guy for Bayern.
Historically, we've seen player power play a large role in the success or rapid failure of a manager. Joe, do you think De Zerbi can find a place for Thomas Muller? Because that feels like it will be somewhat important to making things go smoothly.
I think any manager would find 1,800 minutes for Thomas Muller across all competitions next season.
Niko Kovac.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But I mean, I think Muller fits, like, his ability. I can actually see this being really, really strong. His ability to find and exploit space in sort of the way it always has seemed like Thomas Muller sees the game feels in line with what Zerbi likes to do, right? The big example, and this was sort of a semi-viral thing if you're in the tactics nerd space like I am last year, is this trend where all of a sudden you would see Brighton center backs with their foot on top of the soccer ball, right? Which is kind of weird because you think about, okay, in general, you want to play quickly. You want to move the ball quickly. And what can't you do when your foot's on top of the soccer ball? Do like anything quickly. You have to roll it off the bottom of your boot. Then you have to go and figure out the angle for your pass. It's not a position where you can do the next action immediately. And that was intentional from De Zerbi. Like literally intentional conversations in training before games to his center backs. It was intentional to bait the opposition press forward, right? You put your foot on the top of the ball. You're making it clear, like, hey, I'm vulnerable. Come get me. But really, it's all this gambit, right? It's all this
gambit. Everyone
does
it now as well.
Yes, like, it's caught on.
It's really common now.
And to the point where you see it in MLS, like Wilfred Nancy has a lot of these same traits and I think sees the game in a very similar way. His center backs will put their foot on the ball. It's a trap. Like, it has fallen Admiral Akbar. It's a trap for opposing presses. But you can't. Like, you almost can't help yourself. And Thomas Muller, obviously not a center back. Thank you. We're not building to him playing as a center back under De Zerbi in this fictional reality. But like the level of detail that De Zerbi goes in to create little pockets of space between the lines just feels something that is right aligned. Feels like something that is right aligned with Thomas Muller's spirit and the way he sees the game. So I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree with that, Joe. It would be a lot of fun. Am I the only one, though, who is intrigued by the thought of Nagelsmann going back?
The storyline is so good, Graham. It's so good.
I mean, yeah, I think it would be interesting from a narrative standpoint. It seems real, real dumb to me. Go ahead, Graham.
Well, I can't really understand why he would do it, to be honest. Particularly if he has to apologize to them, which you were telling me, Taylor, is like the reporting that he has to acknowledge he's learned a lesson or something.
Yes, acknowledge that like he was the reason for his sacking, that he was doing things away from football that were problematic, and he has to kind of show that he has grown and changed as a manager before he could be brought back. That seems like a big ask from the jump to ask of a manager that you sort of unceremoniously sacked and did so in a pretty public and high profile way. It feels like for you all to go back to him would be basically saying, never mind, we were wrong, not never mind, you were wrong, but we'll take you back.
It's a big ask when the thing they're asking him to do does not actually reflect reality.
Yeah.
And the fact that Bayern Munich and their board were the reason things went wrong for Julian Nagelsmann. Let's set the table a little bit with Nagelsmann. Of course, he is currently in charge of the German national team. He's under contract until the end of the Euros, so that in itself would be a potential complication because he wouldn't be available until mid-July at the earliest. There's also reports that the DFB is already talking to Nagelsmann about an extension until the next World Cup, so he might just fancy staying in that position and that takes him off the table. But putting those things to the side, I don't think it would be too surprising if Nagelsmann wanted to go back from a footballing point of view. So the first time he was there, it felt like Nagelsmann was working with his hands tied behind his back. He was brought in to provide new ideas, but also not really. Like, there was pushback from the boards on when he actually tried to implement those ideas and tried to change the formation, and they took him aside and they said, no, we play more like a 4-3-3 and with wingers, like, just play that way. This time, though, and we've already covered this with some of the discussion around Xabi Alonso, there's a new sporting director in place, Max Eberl. He has real license to reshape that squad and the culture at the club. I think, look, more fool me if this is another bluff from Bayern Munich, but it really does seem like there's maybe a recognition this time that they do actually need to change the culture at that club and modernise and even change the style of play on the pitch. So I think Nagelsmann could potentially be sold on that. He is a German, and Bayern Munich are like the dominant biggest club in German football, so there's naturally an appeal there. But I do think the question is that's yet to be answered, because we're still early in this process. I'm not really sure what kind of manager Bayern Munich are looking for here. I think they need someone, my opinion is they need someone who can carry them into the modern age, because they're sort of stuck in no man's land at the moment. They're not a possession team. Yeah, they play in quick transition, but not as well as some other teams on their level. They don't press particularly well, at least comparing them to other teams on their level. So they need someone who can go in and change that, and they need someone who can change the culture at the club, because it feels like that's a big factor. There's a staleness within that dressing room, a lack of protection from an overbearing board. So I think Bayern need a manager who can form a union with a barrel and impose their own ideas on the entire club. I'm just not convinced that the Bayern Munich board is going to hand over that freedom and give two people that kind of license. And that's where I come back to, I'm not entirely sure what kind of manager Bayern Munich are looking for, because you look at the names on that list. Yes, there is some overlap between De Zerbi and Nagelsmann, who are most strongly being linked with that job. Once you get further down that list, and apparently Jose Mourinho has been considered by Bayern Munich as well, it gets a little bit blurry in terms of what they're looking for in a manager here. So that thing, yeah. I spoke about the common thread with Liverpool being an encouraging thing. It's not quite as encouraging with Bayern Munich, because I can't quite see that thread at the moment.
I'm also not convinced that hiring somebody from the Bundesliga is the smart move either, though you have the proven track record of that manager, whomever they are, having success in the league or doing things with a smaller club or a club with at least a slightly bigger budget. Ultimately, it still feels like whenever they do that, it ends up as it's a big step up and maybe you're not ready for it. And there's players who then think maybe they have more standing or more control, but it didn't work for Kovac. It didn't work for Nagelsmann. There's someone else in there that I'm forgetting that it didn't work for either. So that would be a conundrum for me, because it really does immediately limit the pool all the more. Maybe it is Jurgen Klopp in the end. That would be a bit surprising. The one that I wouldn't be as surprised by, especially if they don't feel like they can wait for Nagelsmann, because I think you have to wait for the Euros to be over for Germany. And if he fails at the Euros, do you appoint Nagelsmann? If he wins with Germany, does he want to leave? Is that the point where he leaves and goes back to Bayern Munich? I think there's a lot of ifs and thens and what ifs. The one that could be potentially interesting is Ralf Rangnick for me. And it goes the opposite of what you were talking about, Graham. It's basically you're bringing in a respected veteran coach who speaks German, who isn't coming in to be like the man and lay down the philosophy and style of what this club is going to be. It is sort of, I have an idea of how I want my team to play, but I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. I'm not asking you all to play a 4-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2 or do anything like that you aren't really comfortable with. He feels like a sort of status quo appointment that could be a stabilizing factor at the same time. But that is me maybe completely making that one up. Joe has his finger in the air.
Yeah, I don't like the stylistic fit there if you're Bayern, although it's not like Jose Mourinho makes a lot of sense on that front. Not that I think that's likely to happen, but the list of managers, Graham, to your point, does feel a bit scattered. Rangnick's just always been the Red Bull guy, right? He's always been this is how he sees the game. He is the philosopher sort of the Red Bull style, at least in the modern era. And that's just never really been what Bayern Munich are. And I don't think they would be best served making that transition. But also, Bayern have been a bit of a chaos club, at least compared to previous Bayern standards. So what do I know?
So if we had to guess, similar to what we did with Liverpool, if we send Amorim to Liverpool, who are we sending to Bayern Munich, Graham?
I think De Zerbi, largely because, to Joe's point, it feels like he's got one foot out the door at Brighton and he would be open to that opportunity. It really wouldn't surprise me if it's Nagelsmann either, to be honest. I can see the opportunity to go back and remold in the way that he wanted to originally would appeal, but the Euros is a big obstacle. It'd be a big obstacle with Ralf Rangnick as well. He's doing an excellent job at Austria. So I don't know whether he would want to leave that position, because he's kind of floated around for the last decades and not really had a huge amount of success, certainly in a coaching sense, and he's found a position where he is enjoying himself and having that success. But yeah, I'll go with De Zerbi. It feels like is the most likely candidate.
Yeah, I think I'm good with that. Joe, you're good with that?
See.
All right. Then let's move to Barcelona, which is interesting because we've taken De Zerbi off the table. I think he is number two on the betting odds list for who could take over there. We should start with Graham. Do we think they will actually end up needing a different manager, or do we think Xavi ends up staying?
Yes, as things stand, Xavi is leaving Barcelona at the end of the season, or so he says. Reports this week claim that Barcelona are pushing hard for Amorim. They want to beat Liverpool to the punch. All the things I said about Amorim for Liverpool would make him a good candidate for Barcelona, I guess.
Would it? I mean, if Ronald Koeman gets destroyed for playing a back three, and that's what Amorim wants to do, I feel like that's an immediate source of conflict, though that might have been more a Ronald Koeman thing than it was a formation.
Well,
Ronald Koeman
didn't. There were times Ronald Koeman didn't show an interest in having the ball, which felt like more of a sacrilegious crime as a Barcelona manager.
That's a real thing that happened. You're right. It's also just oh so dumb because Xavi's played a back three in possession every game, and that stuff kind of makes me want to curl up into a little ball and just give up.
All right, so
wow,
let's
Joe's
not do
actually
that.
Doing it.
Let's
he's curling up on
oh,
no. the ball
Joe,
right
Joe,
now as we speak.
Oh, he's so anyway, really pulley now, folks. It's going to be tough to get him out of there. Graham, keep talking. I'll do my best with Joe.
Okay, thanks. When it comes to it, I suspect Barcelona won't be appointing a new manager at all this summer. That's the way things are trending, because there is more and more reporting that one, Barcelona want Xavi to stay and are trying to persuade him to stay. They never really wanted him to leave in the first place, to be honest. They didn't really want to have that on their plate this summer, find a new manager. But two, Xavi is open to the idea of staying, albeit with some big conditions attached. One of those conditions apparently is that he wants more money spent in the summer window, so we'll see what levers Barcelona can pull to make that happen. Xavi has made some mistakes. I don't think this season has been great for him, but over the two seasons, there has still been progress over the two seasons. You look at what the mess that he inherited, I don't think you can argue that Barcelona are not in a better position now than they were when he first came in. There is a core of young players that he has brought through. I think some of the tactical thinking has become a bit muddled this season, but nonetheless, there are general principles in place that he wants to use as Barcelona manager. And Barcelona are in a difficult place right now financially. And I think if they can persuade Xavi to stay, I think they should, because he might be one of the few people who can navigate through that. This is obviously an intangible thing here, but he has that weight of personality with the Barcelona fans. He has that authority within the dressing room as a Barcelona legend. I think that counts for something with some of those young players coming through. So Amorim is obviously a decent candidate. Nagelsmann is on that list. Hansi Flick is the other one that's been strongly linked with the Barcelona
favorite
job right now. He's been out of work since being fired by Germany last year, and Barcelona have liked him for a long time. There have been discussions in the past when this job has come up, and Flick has clearly been successful in the past. But I have to say, I'm not really sure what he stands for as a coach in 2024. His Bayern team didn't really play as Barcelona traditionally want to play. His big fault as Germany manager was to favour older, established stars over youth. So that doesn't really fit with this current Barcelona team. If Barcelona want Flick this summer, my reading is it's because it's the easy and potentially cheap option. He is out of work. They wouldn't have to pay compensation to a club. He's a big name that they can sell to fans. Like, look at us, we've got a Bayern Munich manager, a former Germany manager. I kind of think he'd be a pretty unambitious hire at this point. So if those are the two options, Hansi Flick or keep Xavi Hernandez, despite the fact I have been critical of him this season and of Barcelona this season, I still think the most logical, level-headed choice is to stick with Xavi.
Yeah, and I think along with that, Graham, it also creates less friction in a club that has had almost nothing but friction recently. And I guess really what I mean by that is, I would imagine that just keeping Xavi would be less expensive than going out there and dealing with all this and then finding someone new and figuring out a new contract. Because let's be honest, Barcelona's biggest problem hasn't been tactical, although I think there have been some valid tactical issues. It's the fact that they don't have any money. Like, yeah, they spend more than most teams in the world.
Is that a problem?
It does sort of seem that way. Like, the one thing that we think we know about one, or at least one of the things we think we know most about soccer, is that the more you spend on your wage bill, generally the better you're going to be. What does that mean? Well, better players win games. And Barcelona right now do not have a squad that can go toe-to-toe with Real Madrid. They do not have a squad that can go toe-to-toe with some of the other top teams in Europe. Like, the real resources for Barcelona need to go to the team. Like, need to go to, maybe for a transfer strategy, not going back for Robert Lewandowski after he's past his prime, although I do think he's still a good player. Same with Gundogan. Like, finding more quality and not relying on a 16-year-old on the wing. Like, I don't know. That just so clearly is the biggest issue for Barcelona rather than the managerial stuff. That might be an issue, but it's not the biggest one. And I if there is any way to do it, maybe you're pulling another lever, I don't know. I think the next step for this Barcelona squad is to go out there and like fix your actual squad.
I don't disagree, Joe. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more Barcelona. We'll talk a few other clubs, and then we will call this one Big Thinged. Back soon. Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. Joe, to pick up where we left off talking about Xavi and Barcelona, if he were to leave at the end of the season, if he decides this isn't for me, it's too stressful, there's been too much chaos, I do think that would be fair for him. I do think it is fair to incorporate that into our understanding of the job he has done at Barcelona. It has been very financially unstable. It has been really chaotic. I think he has done a good job of navigating that in a way that other managers would have struggled with. That begs the question to me, if he is out of work from Barcelona, do we feel like Xavi becomes an attractive candidate for some of these gigs we're talking about?
No.
Right? It's weird. I don't know why.
We just haven't quite seen Barcelona obviously win the title last season. They will not win the title this season. It doesn't feel like Xavi's done much that has been above what's been expected of him at Barcelona, frankly. Like, you look at the squad, you look at the chaos about doing what they've done this year, doesn't feel all that far off the mark. And winning the title last year was also reasonable. Like, they're in those kinds of conversations. So no, I guess not really.
All right. Then we look at the odds again, because there's one that we have to discuss, but we'll get to him in a moment. Hansi Flick is the betting odds favorite. Roberto De Zerbi is second. Number three, coaches in the Premier League. Any guesses?
Arteta. Barcelona really like Arteta, but yeah, I'm not going to get him.
Is there any reason for him to leave Arsenal?
No.
Especially with where they are right now.
No.
And if they win the Premier League, all right. Number four, I feel like I could give you all 100 guesses and you would not get it.
Is it Jose?
No, it's not even a person I know as a manager, and I will give you one hint.
Rafa
and then
Marquez.
A massive hint. Let's talk about that, Joe. Why is Rafa Marquez a 10-1 betting odd?
So what had happened, Grim, correct me if I'm wrong, when the whole Xavi thing came out, there was like, well, will Rafa Marquez come in and just kind of finish the rest of the season, right? That was the story, or at least become some sort of a caretaker manager figure. That was in some of the original reporting, and I guess his name is still around. Don't do that.
Barcelona. Is he coaching?
Yeah, he is in the Barcelona setup. I have to say, gotcha. I didn't catch that story initially when Xavi made the decision to leave at the end of the season. I do know that Rafa Marquez is in
the second
Barcelona
team manager,
setup.
Not?
Right, yeah. He might be the B team manager. Which obviously
before.
we've seen that progression work previously for Barcelona. So maybe it's not as far fetched as initially it seems. But yeah, it doesn't really feel like things are trending towards him in a lot of the reporting.
So are we saying the most logical course of action for Barcelona would be to try to convince Xavi to stay, even if you can't necessarily guarantee him the money that he would like to be able to spend in the summer?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, yeah.
It's a weird one. It's a weird situation. It's a weird situation across the board. Joe, I'm going to make it an even weirder one for you. You have to incorporate everything into this. It has to be including the manager's reputation or lack thereof coming into one of these clubs. If one of them had to hire Wilfried Nancy, who does that? Like, where does that work the best of these three that we've talked about? Liverpool, Bayern Munich, or Barcelona? Where does that go the best it could possibly go?
Probably Liverpool. because it feels like they are the club that is the least chaotic of those three right now. Barcelona have been pure chaos mode. Bayern Munich have missed on more transfers and have, you know, pulled the trigger more quickly on managers than we seem to remember them doing in years past. Liverpool feel like the club that has the most realistic expectations, is the best run, has the most robust sort of departments built out behind the scenes, at least relative to their level. So I would say Liverpool is probably that one. Tactically, there is something inside of me that just so desperately wants like someone to come in and help usher back that classic like tiki-taka era in Barcelona. And Xavi is about as close to that tie as you're going to get, both in how he sees the game and obviously his ties to Pep Guardiola and to being on that team. But man, the aesthetics of Nancy Ball in Barcelona are pretty high on my list. But then there's the back three, Taylor. So forget it. Forget it. It can't happen. Can never happen. Also, don't do that. Well, for not sake, go to like a small European team first and then work your way up.
So Man United? All right.
Yeah. One or the other. They're about the same level these days. So.
All right. Well,
I wish that were true.
Let's talk Man United for a moment. Graham, what do we think happens there? I feel like you have long been, if not a proponent, then a speculator that it would end up being Graham Potter in charge this time next season, or at the start of next season, at least.
Yeah, I've got stock in that idea, don't I, at this point. Obviously, the arrival of Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos as the new minority owners at Manchester United has changed the dynamic there. New CEO, new sporting director, new technical director. Jason Wilcox is leaving Southampton for that role. That was confirmed this week. So it's natural that people join the dots and think new manager as well. It is largely speculation at this point, though. There's not been a great deal of reporting, which is probably a good thing for Manchester United because it suggests Ineos are taking their time to assess things and kind of see the lay of the land before they make a decision. There have been some tentative reports. There was that one week where there was a lot of strong links with Gareth Southgate. Apparently he was the pick to be Manchester United manager this summer. Those were dismissed pretty quickly. Then Gary O'Neill was the next one that was mentioned.
Yeah.
The Potter stuff continues to bubble away as well in the background, but it seems to be largely conjecture at this point. It feels like over the last month, there's been a slight change in the vibe coming out of Manchester United, and that vibe is Erik ten Hag will have an opportunity to pitch for his own job, kind of depending on how this season pans out. I don't know whether that's a particularly good way to gauge things. I imagine Ineos and Ratcliffe and Dan Ashworth and whoever are probably looking at a larger sample size. But if Manchester United were to somehow claw their way into the Champions League at the end of this season, it does kind of feel like Ten Hag would be given the opportunity to start next season.
This doesn't relate to Manchester United because that would never happen. But given the sort of lack of obvious options if there are vacancies in management, is Jurgen Klopp just going to be the shadow that hangs over every club next year and in seasons to come? Do we feel like he's actually done, or do we feel like it's just going to be him as soon as any big club is struggling? Is it going to be Jurgen Klopp linked right away?
Probably not with Manchester United. Yeah,
that would be the one that probably won't happen, yes.
I kind of feel like he's done for a bit. Like, I think he's got a ticket booked to New York. He's got his referee shirt on. He's going to go do some, like, you know, youth soccer stuff in New York like Pep did. I don't know. I have a hard time believing it. It doesn't feel like Klopp has really anything left to prove, to be totally honest, and seems like a guy who tries to be honest and transparent and probably just wants a break. But also, these people are maybe not super normal, and so maybe that's all wrong.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised that his name isn't higher up the Bayern Munich job odds, just because in the past, Bayern Munich have had an obsession with this idea of Jurgen Klopp at some point being their manager. Like, they're the biggest German club. They want the best German manager to be in charge. Clearly they believe that's not possible, that's not feasible this summer. There's been no reporting around that at all, but it would not surprise me even 6 months down the line if De Zerbi isn't panning out for Bayern Munich, if Klopp is being mentioned in relation to that job. I don't think he is finished. I think he will have another big job in him. I just wonder if it's maybe the German national team rather than Bayern Munich.
All right, well, then I will be bold and say I don't think Klopp will be the next Manchester United manager. There will be a new manager next season, or do we think it will be Erik ten Hag? I sort of lean towards them sticking with ten Hag, maybe because there are so many new people in place. They're trying to figure things out. It might be too short of a turnaround time to then sack a manager and find someone else that sort of ticks all the boxes. I'm still not sure that Erik ten Hag is the person that Ineos want, or is the right even choice long term. But I'm also not sure more instability is a good thing for Man United either.
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on when Dan Ashworth takes over at Manchester United. He's still on gardening leave. That garden must be looking incredible by now, from Newcastle United. And so I could understand why, if he's not allowed to take over this summer, which seems to be the way things are, the reporting suggests that will be the case, if he's not able to take over until the start of 2025, then I could see them kind of just treading water with Erik ten Hag until that point. I really couldn't call it at this point. I think when Ineos initially took over, I was pretty strong on there being a new manager this summer. But as we're getting closer to that period, and the fact there doesn't seem to be an outstanding candidate, I do think that the interest in Potter is genuine. Ineos have tried to hire him previously. I think the Southgate link comes from Dan Ashworth's previous working relationship with Southgate at the FA, but there's not really someone you look to and think that's the guy who will turn Manchester United into a force again, and so that could be a factor in Ten Hag just kind of continuing.
The other reason why I do think it could end up being somebody like Graham Potter is just that if things continue as they are for Manchester United, where you win a game, you lose a game, you draw a game, sometimes you lose to Man City and that's explainable, sometimes you lose to Fulham and that's less explainable, sometimes you draw Brentford and that is even more of a head-scratcher because you probably should have lost that game. It does make me feel like they could see Graham Potter as a we'll-give-you-a-year deal and we'll see what you can do in that year, and then maybe we give you something beyond that. Maybe that's a gig he would take because he has been out of a job. But I don't think Erik ten Hag is helping his situation at time of recording. I'm also not sure it's dire enough that a change needs to be made. I feel like a very similar thing could be said about Chelsea with Mauricio Pochettino. We've talked about Chelsea a lot at various points this season, and yet, like, genuinely this week, only did I realize that they are on 40 points and in 12th. Like, I don't know why that has flown under the radar for me, but it totally has, that they are 1 point better than Fulham, they are 1 point behind Bournemouth, they're 2 points behind Wolves. They are not looking great, but 2 wins, 3 draws in their last 5. It could be worse. They're 2 points better off than they were at this point last season. More goals scored. Goals conceded is a pretty abysmal figure. Do we think they should stick with Pochettino, Graham?
Did you say 2 points better off than last season at this stage of the season? Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Right. So at that rate, they'll win the title within the next, like, 25 years.
Saudi Arabia, right around when Saudi Arabia is hosting the World Cup, I think, is when they'll be pushing into the top four, at least.
Yeah, so that's the carrot that Chelsea fans need to keep in their vision. Similar to the Manchester City job, there's not a lot reporting around Pochettino at Chelsea and whether he could be in trouble at the end of the season. The troubling thing for him is that the Chelsea support really seems to have turned against him. Obviously, as a former Spurs manager, He was on thin ice already, but there have been pretty loud chants against him at a number of matches this season. Obviously, results in the league haven't been good, as you outlined, Taylor. And Chelsea managers have been sacked for a lot less. And I just don't trust the Chelsea ownership and leadership group to ignore that fan sentiment, even if they should. And I think there is a case to be made, despite everything that you say, Taylor, about those are factual things, the league table and results. I think there's just enough to suggest Chelsea are heading in the right direction. They are playing a more proactive game. Their underlying numbers are better than their results have been. The caveat there, of course, is it was the same last season when Chelsea were pretty dreadful. But there are a young group of players that has been assembled by a front office with a scattergun transfer strategy. And it hasn't been easy for Pochettino to make a coherent team out of that. Plus, Chelsea went through 3 managers last season. And where did that get them when they made those decisions? So I still have some faith that Pochettino can point. Yeah, it was worth it all along. I do still have some faith that Pochettino can point Chelsea in the right direction. This season was always going to be difficult. It's been more difficult than I envisaged. I am mindful of my prediction at the start of the season that they would be in the mix for, like, European football, and that is clearly not the case. So I accept that progress has been slower than Chelsea would have liked. But I do think there has been some progress. And having tried the other thing, as I say, of, like, 3 managers in a season, that didn't work. Maybe let's go with the other kind of continuity option for a little while.
Hey, if Bayern are bringing back Nagelsmann, maybe that's the new trend. Let's get Tuchel back in there and see what happens. It was interesting to me, Graham. I saw an article discussing Chelsea's 2-2 draw with Burnley. Burnley coming back twice, having a man sent off. And it felt very much like it was written through a Chelsea briefing, because a lot of the positives were like, Raheem Sterling wasn't actively booed when he was subbed on. And yes, they were largely booed at the end of the game, but that's to be expected after you draw Burnley. Like, it was just such a, like, It seems like all of the things that were bad are still sort of happening from a fan perspective. But Graham, I agree with you. It does seem like with the way this squad has been assembled, with the reporting, even like back to Graham Potter about how they were like players having to change in the hallways because there wasn't enough space. It just seems like figuring out who fits and who can play in the style that Pochettino wants and then building up that confidence. Mudryk would be a prime example of a player who just seems to have a bit more confidence, even though it's taken a really long time for him to find that form and that level of belief. It still feels like a thing that you stick with, largely because I'm not sure if there's an option out there that makes things better. Joe, do you feel like there is an option out there that could make Newcastle better? Because they does seem like they have a decision to make in the near future regarding Eddie Howe and if he is the right one to take that project forward.
In so many of these examples, I really think we continue to put too much focus on managers when it comes to the rise and fall of certain teams. Newcastle have had issues this season. They have not lived up to their impressive year last season. I wonder if playing a lot more games has something to do with that. Hint, I'm quite sure it does. And their injury list has something to do with that. Hint, I'm also quite sure that does. I don't see a need right now to move on from Eddie Howe. Like, again, are we super overwhelmed in a positive sense by the other options that feel gettable from Newcastle? I'm not. I know they've got some front office turnover when it comes to Dan Ashworth and his exit, which we've sort of already mentioned in a different conversation. I would kind of just let well enough alone and think that as Newcastle continue to invest into this team, continue to get stronger and adjust to their new life as a bigger club than they've ever been in some strange ways, I don't really see a need to do that.
Taylor's played this game with us earlier in the show, guess the favourites. Does anyone want to have a stab at who the favourite for the Newcastle United job is?
Wow.
Any guesses?
Potter or Southgate or...
So he is Potter's in there, he's second favourite. The favourite is a certain Portuguese icon...
Wow.
Who really? Would jump at Don't another opportunity that. To prove himself in the Premier League, I would guess.
No. Yes, that's crazy. Him.
He's the favourite. So you the mean, list is
I think
Mourinho.
I'd go Conte before I would go Mourinho.
Well, he's on the list.
Just let it be. Like, I don't understand. Like, a lot of this stuff was a natural, like, almost expected drop-off from last year to this year when it comes to, like, the fixture congestion and the, like... I honestly don't anticipate Newcastle making a change. It seems like they're smarter than that. And I'm not saying Eddie Howe is a perfect coach. Like, there isn't one of those. Those people don't exist. But I just don't see any real reason. So, it feels like you're just making a change for the sake of making a change.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, Joe. But where I land on with Newcastle is it comes down to ambition, right? This is a club that is technically the richest in the world, even though they're not allowed to use a lot of those resources because of PSR and FFP rules. But nonetheless, they've got those resources behind them. They have stated they want to be winning titles, honours. And while Eddie Howe has generally done a good job at Newcastle United, can I, and I'll ask you this question, can you envisage him challenging for those honours? Like we've spoken about, and I accept your point with the influence of managers. We had that discussion last week, but I also made the point that at the elite level, the influence of the best managers is outsized, and that can make a difference. Do we think Eddie Howe is that person? Because I'm struggling to envisage that.
Yeah, I think probably not, which then does open the door. But like, who's the person? Like, who are you going to go out there and find this summer? Maybe someone pops up and there's a golden opportunity and you should take it. But I also think Eddie Howe has done a lot of good with Newcastle, like instituting a really aggressive pressing style that has seen them like have some real success over the last couple of seasons, obviously less this year than last season. But really, I don't think any manager is going to come in and contend for a title with this squad or with the squad that Newcastle is going to have next year. So point taken, Graham. But until you can find one of those people and until you can give them the squad that they'll need to go out there and actually hit what Newcastle want to hit, I just don't think there's any real merit in making a change.
So not Mourinho then?
I would say probably not. Yeah.
Okay. Let's say there's a reality in which Luis Enrique walks away from PSG at the end of the season. That feels like one that would be an upgrade that Newcastle would have to see as
huge.
Like, that's a guy that can kind of take us to that level.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you would envisage that Lucho would implement like a clear style of play and identity, and if that's aligned with the front office at Newcastle, which can spend money, then that could be quite a potent combination.
He feels like one who is at that level where he instantly is the like bidding war, because I think Newcastle would probably jump at that one. I feel like Man United might be asking some questions. And then the ones we mentioned earlier. I mean, Bayern, I feel like that would make some sense. Barcelona, that would maybe be a riskier proposition for the way things played out there at the end. And even maybe Liverpool. You never know. So Luis Enrique, I guess if things turn toxic at PSG or more toxic, we'll see what happens there. Final one, it does feel like we will be seeing Juve sacking Max Allegri before
finally
too long. Any speculation as to what goes on with Juve this summer? The last report I saw, and I am out of date on this one, was Weston McKennie being asked to take a pay cut because all of their players are being asked to take pay cuts because they don't have a ton of money. I'm not sure that puts them in the best bargaining position to bring in a top-tier, high-profile manager. I feel like we're setting the stage for Antonio Conte to go back to Juve, basically.
That could happen. With Wes McKennie, I thought you were going to say he's just using too much ranch at dinner.
Also
they're docking his pay. Like,
Wes, we've talked about it, dude. You can't go through a whole bottle with your chicken. You just can't, man.
Well, he can. He just shouldn't, right. Is the point. Yeah, it is. With Allegri, it's surely time for Juventus to finally get rid of him. He's offering nothing to that club. Performance has been dreadful over a sustained period of time. He's not a good man manager. He's got no new ideas. Juventus kept him at the end of last season because they basically couldn't afford to get rid of him. They just have to find that money because they are losing full seasons now to being under the control of Max Allegri. This time it does feel like there's been a change in the stance because apparently if Juventus struggle or get a negative result in their next two games against Fiorentina and Torino, then that could be it for Allegri. That was the reporting I read this morning. I also read that while Zidane has been mentioned as a potential Juventus manager for as long as really I can remember at this point, for a number of years, of course he played for them as a player, the Italian press have Motta as the most likely appointment, obviously doing an incredible job for Bologna this season. Not quite on Xavi Alonso's level, but there is a sense that he could potentially be someone who jumps up to that first tier of managers, potentially one of the kind of best managers of the next generation. So yeah, I can't speak to the financials. I don't know how much money Juventus have got to spend on a new manager, getting rid of Allegri and then hiring a new one. But if it's a free pick, then Thiago Motta feels like a pretty ambitious, a pretty positive appointment.
Joe, you good with Motta to Juve?
I would absolutely adore that decision. It would actually make Juve entertaining to watch for once, and that makes me happy.
Betting odds right now are Conte, Nagelsmann, Pochettino, Zidane, Paolo Montero, Jose Mourinho is in there, Diego Simeone is in there, and then Simone Inzaghi, and then Fabio Cannavaro. No mention of Thiago Motta, but I assume he will be on that list if and when the time comes. Gentlemen, any other managers we should speculate upon? Graham, where will Brendan Rodgers be next season?
Who knows? I honestly couldn't tell you. I mean, he wants to be back in the Premier League.
Liverpool
desperately wants to be back in the Premier League. Yeah, give him the Man United job. I actually think Manchester United had an interest in him for a period, didn't they? Like a couple of years ago. But that didn't happen. How did you feel about that, Taylor? Brendan Rodgers?
No, thank you. What about Thomas Tuchel? Does Thomas Tuchel have appeal, do you think, at the end of this season?
I can't call Tuchel at all. I think his stock has taken a real hit post Bayern Munich. He's kind of flamed out of every club.
Yeah.
He's kind of flamed out of every club he's been at this point in his career. And previously you could say, well, you know, there's immediate success. He wins the Champions League at Chelsea. He has some immediate success at PSG and at Dortmund as well. I guess he won the title last season at Bayern, but how much of that was down to him? I think a negligible amount. And this season has been a disaster for Bayern Munich. So the report I read recently is he wants to come back to the Premier League. I don't know where that landing spot is for him, frankly. I couldn't call. Maybe that's the Newcastle appointment. Maybe that's the most likely landing spot, but I don't really know.
So it would be, if we're comparing them to Man City, so then Eddie Howe would be Mark Hughes. Thomas Tuchel would be Manuel Pellegrini. And then we just need to figure out who Newcastle's Pep will be. Maybe it's Pep. Maybe it's Klopp. If that happens, we will certainly be discussing another big thing. When any of these positions are filled, we will probably end up discussing it either on the regular show or on a big thing episode. But for now, gentlemen, thank you all for spending over an hour of your lives speculating wildly about managers. Joe Lowry, excellent speculation by you.
Oh, and to you, Taylor. I'm always down for some speculation.
And Graham Ruthven, Jose Mourinho to Sterling Albion, who says no? Jose?
Okay. Me.
And you. No,
and Jose as well. Yeah, everyone says no to that. Thank you, Taylor.
But Graham, thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Listeners, thank you all, as always, and we'll talk to you.